Thanks for tuning into Americana Music Profiles. The next episode starts right now.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Bobcat is a one-man band like no other, drawing inspiration from the likes of garage rock, soul music, rhythm and blues, rockabilly, and Americana. This one-man band takes the notion one step further with ornate arrangements and minimal accompaniment. Bobcat is our guest on this edition of Americana Music Profiles.
Bobcat, how are you? Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for taking the time out of your busy morning to join us here today. You are in Long Island, New York. Is that correct?
Yes, I am.
We're chatting here mid-December. Is it cold there for you yet?
It's about 30 degrees outside.
Getting ready for the ice storm. I think we're expecting one coming up through the East Coast this morning.
Oh, I'm sure we're going to get it. Any kind of weather in New York always gets it.
So tell me a little bit about yourself and your musical journey. How did music itself start for you? Have you always been in New York? Did you grow up with it as a child?
Yeah. I always grew up in New York. I play in a psychobilly band called the Arkhams primarily. That's been my thing for the last close to 20 years.
Okay.
Before that, I played in a band called the Black Market Band, the Devil Stage, and then like a few local Long Islanders didn't really do much other than that. Yeah, I'm a lifer with music.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, for the last 15 years, that's been what I do.
Yeah, and as a child, introduced to it at what stage? Piano, guitar, what was your first instrument?
First instrument was mandolin when I was 4 years old.
Okay.
My grandma and grandpa got me that.
Yeah. And mandolin, what was your first musical endeavor? Mandolin usually leans itself to country bluegrass flavors.
Well, my first actual musical endeavor, even though I learned, G, C, D, A, E, on the mandolin, my real passion for music was when I listened to the Beatles live at the BBC circa 1994.
Okay. Awesome.
Now Beatles live at the BBC, it's not your standard Beatles album. It's like, it was before they became the Beatles, they were doing like a lot of rhythm and blues, rockabilly,
yeah,
soul music classics. That's what prompted me, after I learned all that album, rudimentary, because I wasn't no John or George or Paul on the guitar.
Uh-huh.
But it prompted me, the original version of Kansas City is this. The version they listened to is something other than this.
Uh-huh.
This is how, and I did that with almost every song on the album.
Interesting.
And that's what really got me. My first huge rockabilly kick was at the age of about 16. So I listened to other stuff as well. It was the 90s. We had grunge. We had the ska revival.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But this was right before the Brian Setzer swing revival.
Right.
And right before that, by the time of that swing revival, where Brian Setzer's music was getting airplay again.
Oh, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
I was already knee-deep in it where I knew it. And I could join bands, assuming they wanted to actually play that stuff. And, of course, Long Island, they didn't.
Right.
Long Island, the first real band I played in, it was a five-piece. I guess it was kind of alternative rock. Kind of had a Nirvana influence, kind of had a Marilyn Manson influence, kind of had a Guns N' Roses influence. But it was fun playing with those cats.
Mm-hmm,
to this day, I still stay in touch with most of them on a very, once, twice a year basis.
Yeah, that's cool. When did the songwriting aspect of this come into play for you?
Well before that. Songwriting started around 1997. Again, the first song I wrote, it actually ended up on an Arkhams album called I Want a Woman. That song, it was a rewrite of Rockabilly when I described the weekend of 15-year-old kid living on Long Island. It's very like, you know, it's Friday night, I'm all alone, ain't doing nothing but hanging around the home. You know, and it's one of those songs, it's a throwaway song. But you know what? My bandmates wanted to do it because we didn't have a lot of experience then. Not those bands, not the 90s bands, but the Arkham circa 2006.
Right.
And it made its way into our set.
Yeah.
You know? Not like anything, you know, not unlike anything else. And it quickly got phased out because I started writing better songs. I had, you know, real actual collaborators. That was the first time. The Arkhams was the first time where I had real collaborators working with me.
Yeah.
Before that, I mean, I collaborated with people that was very limited on what they would want to do and what I would want to do. The Arkhams had, you know, at least Matt, Sean, Johnny had an open mind about.
Sure. But, yeah. And that particular group you mentioned was kind of your regular gig, and you guys are mostly playing limited to that area where you live?
Oh, no. The Arkhams? No, we toured the hell out of the U.S.
Okay.
In fact, I'm trying to get back on... I'm booking a tour in April, you know. Originally, it was going to be April and May. I extended it on both ends. Now it's going to be from the end of March through really... September, October, November. Yeah. The sky's the limit because I'm selling this cab company. As you hear, I'm answering the phone taxi, you know, intermittently. Selling this cab company. I found a buyer.
Okay.
Long Island kind of sucks. I want to get back out on tour. I have, this year, I put out 2 15-song albums of original material.
Okay.
I have a third in the can, ready to go. Now, a lot of those songs, especially on the first album, are what I call back catalog.
Uh-huh.
How some of these songs, some of these songs were written in the 90s. There's one song, Only Sounds Goodbye, which was written in like 1998. It's a ballad of, you know, again, it's written by a kid who, you know, just got his heart broken for the first time. But it's not anything to write home about because I've written better songs since, you know, I've written hundreds of better songs since then. And, you know, some of the songs were written in the 90s on that album, on the first album. Some of them, a lot of them were written 10, 15 years ago when the Arkhams were really doing it. It's just back catalog songs that we didn't really want to do at the time. And some of it was stuff, hey, you know, I mean, everyone had a deeply personal experience through the pandemic.
Right, sure.
I got a few songs from the first album and a lot of them on the second album that I wrote when the pandemic happened.
Mm-hmm. And you said the Arkhams are more in more kind of psychedelic, and then you've got this
psychobilly. Psychedelic.
Gotcha. Okay. So the Arkhams are more psychobilly, and then you've got this one man band thing going on too, right? Is that kind of your? Is that what you
That's
do when the band
right now?
Yeah.
I mean, right now because Long Island is really not a lot of guys playing mutant, like anything remotely close to this on the island. The guys on Long Island playing music, but, you know, because it's so expensive to live here, no one really wants to tour, and the ones that do want to tour aren't hip to this yet. Nor do I want to bring someone on tour that I can't pay.
Sure.
That's worse.
Right, right.
I bring someone on tour, I want to make sure that they can earn, you know, 100, 200 a day, or more.
Right.
So as I build momentum for this project, there'll be more to go around than 100 or 2 a day.
Yeah.
But right now, with how everything is, I want to build the momentum that brings this project to that.
So when you go out with your band, the Arkhams, your goal is to play the psychobilly music as a band versus as the one man band, like a full band.
Oh, yeah. Well, my goal with the one-man band is to make a one-man band sound like a full band.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, and eventually, whatchamacallit, and eventually expand the one-man band. But that's not going to happen until the one-man band gains momentum. Then I can add a second guy, a third guy, or gal.
Yeah.
Not.
Well, the music has this really interesting rockabilly kind of meets Elvis Costello in the 80s feel to it.
I'm so glad you noticed that.
Yeah,
that's,
okay, cool.
So the funny thing is, the Elvis Costello thing. So I never thought I sounded like Elvis Costello. And the singer, Matt, in the Arkhams and I were like, yeah, I like the Elvis Costello album, so I don't like how his voice is mixed, how it's very loud.
Uh-huh.
Next thing you know, on the first Arkhams album, Road to Arkham, I sang a song called Next Time You See Me, which is kind of like the show closer for the Arkhams. It's, you know, it's what I call Beatlesque rockabilly. That's the first song outside of maybe the Quakes, but really not. Quakes might be the only other band with their album Last of the Human Beings, huge influence on my sound. They're a Beatlesque psychedelic band.
Right.
And the Arkhams have a Beatles, certainly on Next Time You See Me, because I'm a huge Beatles fan. And not many people in the punk and psychedelic scenes or rockabilly are Beatles fans.
Mm.
In fact, it's not very cool or hip to listen to the Beatles in those scenes. They barely will listen to Elvis Costello.
Yeah, okay.
You know, to them, they, you know, Elvis Costello's not hip.
Yeah.
You know, they want to hear something else other than Costello. But I remember, and next thing you know, we're listening back on the recordings, and he's like, dude, your voice sounds like Elvis Costello.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And then I played the song, like, before the album was released. We do everything independently. I've never been on a label, nor do I want to be on a label, unless it's for booking purposes, touring purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But not anything other than that. I don't want to actually sign a contract with anyone.
Right. So the new album that you have out, so you said you just released two, and there's a third one on the way. Is it, did I understand that correctly?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, well, the way this stuff came together, so I've had a few failed attempts at doing a really decent solo. So the first attempt was in 2008. I remember, this is a funny story. So there was a show that the Arkhams played all the time. It was called the Rock and Roll Spook Show. It was the last Saturday, no, first Saturday of every month in Pittsburgh. And my friend Amanda Kill, that's her like stage name, she put it on.
Mm-hmm.
And she would always take us to this vegetarian brunch spot that I thought was amazing. And they had a thrift shop in there. And I saw a 60s Hammond D3 that they were giving away for $100.
Wow.
A 1960s B3 organ, like exactly the organ that I want.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
You know, everyone wants that organ.
Right.
And I was like, hell, I have a tour van. There's 2 weeks for the next tour. I'm going to go out to Pittsburgh and load this the fuck in. I'm going to make a weekend of it, go out that Saturday night and that Sunday morning, because I will have already put the money down with my receipt, load this bad boy into my truck, because they've had that organ at their facility 10 years prior.
Okay.
No one could move it. You know, who cared about it? And I was like, D3? Are you crazy? I'm...
Right,
I'd be crazy not to.
Right,
because those things are they're expensive, and it worked. It sounded great, and it was all tube, and it was all like, you know, exactly what you want in an organ.
Mm-hmm.
So I trucked that back to me. It didn't have a Leslie, but who cares? That you could recreate digitally,
right?
Stick a pedal on it or something. So I trucked that back to New York. I set it up in my basement, which is like my music room. And the next thing you know, my friend who puts on shows, she puts on the Psychobilly Luau. Now she's in the band Screaming Rebel Angels. My friend Laura, you probably know her. She does a lot of work. She's, you know, they're one of the most prominent bands. Back then, she was just putting on festivals and shows and stuff. So her older brother, this guy Ian, was talking to me about building a studio and wanting to get vintage organs. I pitched it to him. I was like, would you be interested in recording an album with me in exchange for a 1960s V3 in your studio? And he was like, absolutely. If I can get that V3 into the studio, I will record the album. As many tracks as you want. With like not unlimited studio time. But then I got the studio, and it wasn't a very conducive environment to creation. So I was like, oh, you know what? This is my learning experience. And then, continued on with the Arkans. I'm like, you know what? We're going to be more prolific. We might as well... might as well keep it going. Keep this. I don't care about the solo record. I'll put something like that out at some point in the game. And then a couple of years went by. So, and then 2014, another opportunity presented itself where I can record some music. And that was the studio that my friend... So I opened up a taxi company in 2012, free Uber, and we did amazing. And that's what kind of took me away from the Arkhams. The only thing that will take me away from the Arkhams. I made money with that. Mm-hmm. In 2014, the owner of it was a local hipster bar, but he was friends with me, and he opened up a studio. And he actually needed to get one of his engineers, the guy Daryl from the band Glaster, a hardcore band from Long Island from years ago. He needed to get him back and forth. It was a 50-mile trip each way for at least a month. So it was a big ride. It was a big ride. And I was like, hey, listen, instead of bartering money, can I record in your studio? Can I record an album in your studio?
Right.
And he was like, absolutely. If you're, if that's the barter payment, I was hoping it would be a barter. I was like, cool. And that was... Some of the sessions came out good. The intern there actually became a good friend of mine. And we stay in touch. And he was telling me, that was one of your best sessions. That was, that was good spirit performance. And it was, because I enjoyed the hell out of it. But it didn't come together. It didn't, and again, I got pulled apart a million different ways, because at the time I had a partner, and... It was 3 years of what I wrote the song Turtle about on the first album. So I had a partner, and I couldn't actually get away, record a song. And this is how it was for 3 years of my life. It wasn't the first year. The first year of the company was good because there was no partners and no, like...
Right, yeah.
Then, I wanted to eventually get away and do some music again. And the only one really interested in working with me in more of a... long-term thing was someone wanted to be a partner. And, the whole partnership was predatory. That's what that song Predatory Partner is about. So there's two songs. Both song number 13 on the first album and the second album that are about that experience. Predatory Partner and Turtle. They're both about the same thing.
Do you have names for these albums? Are they titles?
Oh, the Bobcat album. Well, the first album is self-titled. It's just a picture of a cat on the cover.
Yeah, I saw that.
And like record vinyl-y stuff that me and my friends quickly created out of nothing. We're like, yeah, I didn't expect to do anything with it. Uh-huh. I'm still knee-deep in the cabs.
Right.
I might have done a show a month with a one man band. It wasn't really. Wasn't really anything to build momentum out. So, and then the second album, my mother drew that cover. She did a perfect caricature of me.
She's awesome.
A caricature artist.
That's awesome.
Drew a caricature of me. And that was the second album. It's called Second Album Less Than a Year because, I found that to be a pretty decent accomplishment that I can put out two albums in less than a year, all of 15 original songs.
Yeah. That's awesome.
With performances, with performance I can stand behind. It's perfect? No, I think each album has about two or three highlights, five or six decent songs, and the rest are fluff. Only thing I hope is album two better than album one.
Yeah.
Album three better than album two.
Yeah.
Album four, which I'm already two songs into now, out of 15. I like to put 15 songs on an album to really give you your money's worth.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's also, for my purposes, so I can throw it against, but throw ideas against the wall. I always been doing this. You know, like, my first album, the first song is like a stomp. It's called Smoke and Mirrors. It's, you know, it's like garage, like a psychedelic garage. Second song on that album, it does a 180 shift transition into like a Smokey Robinson influenced soul music.
Yeah.
Third song, cool. Things Have Changed, which is, you know, definitely got that Elvis Costello influence, definitely got a Beatles influence, definitely has a surf music influence. I, you know, I'm playing like a tremolo guitar, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, and then the fourth song, yeah, that's more of a rockier song.
Yeah.
Then the fifth song, Thoughts of Impending Doom, is an instrumental. It's like a jazzy, slide guitar instrumental. Will it do anything? Who knows? But it's a melody I had rolling around in the back of my head for 15 years.
Yeah.
Might as well put it out. Song six, Lonely Sounds Goodbye. That's a song I wrote in 1998. Song seven, I Know What I Did. That was the newest song on that album, being that I wrote it in 2021.
Okay.
Song eight, Danielle Is Not a Girl I Dated, 20 years ago. Song nine, Listen to Me, Baby. It's a collaboration with me and my bandmate Johnny from the Arkhams. He unfortunately passed away 5 years ago. But, you know, it's like, you know, it's an organ-driven soul song.
Mm-hmm.
It originally started life as a rockabilly tune. And then as I listened to it, I was like, you know what? There's too much guitar. And the guy that owns this studio, he's like the guy that owned the studio in Manhattan in 2008, how this guy also, and I record the A-Room in Hicksville, he has a vintage drum set, it's a Slingerland from the 50s. So it's a gorgeous old-school drum set. It gets sounds that you can't get on any modern kit. And he also has a collection of, he has an old Hammond, he has an old Wurlitzer, he has an old, Fender Rhodes piano, he's got an old Lowry organ. Like, these are, you know, these are desirable organs, and they make their way into my music, because I...
Yeah. Yeah, those are great, great sounds for that flavor of music, for sure. So
for any, plus, all the synths and stuff. I'm not really much of a synth guy, but I'm sure I'll make use of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so he's got that, and I was like, all right, you know what? I want to do this song organ-driven, because I've never done that before. And for rockabilly tune, I just keep the guitar playing rhythm in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
And cool. Give it a much different flavor. And then song 10, it's a song about dealing with the mobster. Things you're not supposed to know. Because his two favorite questions he'd ask people. Hi, is your name John? How do you know that? That's his thing. He treats everything like it's something you're not supposed to know.
Mm-hmm.
I actually showed it to the guy. He got a laugh out of it.
Because
all the things that he said, like he's actually wrestling. He would tell the guy, if he was like training someone, he's like, and answer your phone on the first ring. I was like, that's incredibly bold to tell some dude you just met 5 minutes ago, answer your phone on the first ring.
Yeah.
That's one of the most bold things I ever heard someone say.
Yeah. That's cool.
We BS. Me, he calls because, I do some business and we drive in places. And I answer the phone on first ring. I see he calls and he's like, you listened to my advice, didn't you? I'm like, yes, I did.
So we're heading here towards the break, and I want to make sure we get a way for people to contact you and reach out and find out where your tour is going to be and that kind of thing? What's the best way for people to connect with you?
I would say Facebook, www.facebook.com/bobcat1manband. I'm also on Instagram, same handle. I'm also on YouTube, same handle. I'm also on TikTok, same handle. I'm on Spotify. You search Bobcat One Man Band. If you just put in a DuckDuckGo. I like DuckDuckGo rather than Google.
Mm-hmm.
Put in a DuckDuckGo search, Bobcat One Man Band. Find me. You know, I'm on all the mediums, Bandcamp, Reddit, Quora. Nothing I don't do.
And the Arkhams as well, are they searchable?
Well, the Arkhams, yeah, we're also searchable. Put it in Google. We just put out a single about 6 weeks ago called Worst Enemy.
And how do you spell Arkhams for you guys?
A-R-K-H-A-M-S.
All right. Well, thank you, Bobcat. This has been good to get to know about you and your band and your music. It's I love the sound that you guys have created, so we certainly wish you well with the Arkhams tour and also your most recent endeavors and the new album that's on the way.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.